Welcome to the Prescription for Admission podcast, where we talk about hospitals and hospital-based care, who you can expect to meet, and what you may experience during your time in the hospital, both as a patient and also as a healthcare provider working in a hospital. My name is Dr. Monique Nugent. I am a practicing hospitalist and also the author of Prescription for Admission, the book, where I talk about many of the same topics. Thank you for joining me and enjoy the show. Hi, and welcome back to the Prescription for Admission podcast. And I'm here with Dr. Christy Goodson. She is a pediatric hospitalist, and I'm very excited to have her. I am trying to include the experience of parents and children in hospitals and how they navigate that space, which is a little different from how adults and the people who help advocate for adults navigate the space. So Dr. Goodson is going to talk to us a bit about hospital medicine in the pediatric world and how he helps patients and how patients can think of their experience and how they can advocate for themselves. So Dr. Goodson, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So you are a pediatric hospitalist. Have you always practiced in hospitals for pediatric medicine?
No, I started out initially as a primary care pediatrician, mainly outpatient, but I've always, as that role, I also covered inpatient hospital stays as well. So I guess I have always been in the hospital. It's just only what I do right now.
So what drove that transition into the hospital away from the clinic?
Mainly my family and scheduling. It's something I've always enjoyed, but the flexibility was better for my family.
Yeah, I think that that is a big thing in our career in medicine. We have to think about how we can survive in this space long, right? Yes. And what you'll find is that people will change their career in different ways. My practice as well, my group has a few people who were primary care physicians who have made that transition into hospital medicine. And then sometimes we see like people go out of the hospital for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the really unique things about our career is that it does sometimes give you some flexibility that may be a little harder to find in other parts of the medicine world.
Yes.
Yeah. So within pediatric hospital medicine, there are tons of roles. There are lots and lots of different specialists within pediatric hospital medicine. There is newborn nursery. There are neonatologists. There are intensivists. There are specialists. Mm-hmm. You are a hospitalist. Tell us a little bit about how that is unique in the care of children.
Yeah, so I like to think of myself as like the captain of the ship.
Love it.
When a kid gets admitted to the hospital, I help direct care. If it is something that we can cover all on our own, then I primarily care for the patient. If I have to get other specialist services involved, then I help get them involved in the care and make sure that all their recommendations are done. And if there's more than one specialist, making sure everyone communicates and is on the same page.
Are you seeing a specific like group or age group of patients?
We see 0 to just under 18. Once you turn 18, you've hit adult land.
You transition over to my world.
Yes.
But I have seen some kids, I shouldn't say kids, some young adults who are in their 20s who still see their pediatrician who may have some complex needs, pediatricians know them pretty well.
Yeah.
So do you ever kind of venture into that space as well?
We do occasionally get a 20, 21-year-old, but usually it's kids that have complex health needs that they've had probably since birth. And we are used to dealing with a lot of those issues. And so sometimes them being on the pediatric side is more helpful for them. And so we occasionally will keep kids a little bit longer for those reasons.
So 0 to 18, 0 to 21, that's a huge swath of time in a person's development.
Yeah.
My patients, they're adults. they've like developed. They have one set of vitals signs. Their weight isn't really that big an issue. Their weight isn't changing that greatly. But your patient, that's a wide breadth. Is there something unique about caring for people, acutely ill people, who have a wide breadth of what you can expect from them physiologically and also psychologically, right? Because mm-hmm. your teenage patients, you come into a very different set of concerns, and we can touch base on those a little later.
Yes. And I think something that's unique to the pediatric population is they are completely dependent on another person for mm-hmm. their medical decision making, their care at home. They're not yet an adult and can make those decisions for themselves. So we have to involve family in their care. So it's not only caring for the patient that's sitting in front of you, but also for the family that's around them supporting them.
So does that change a little bit as a kid gets older, right?
Because
four-year-old can't give any kind of consent, but a 14-year-old legally can't sign contracts. A 14-year-old has opinions.
Right, right. Yes, it definitely changes from 0 to 18 as their development changes, as they become more vocal, start understanding. We have to involve them in their care as soon as they're really communicative, and how involved they are changes as they get older and understand more. But it's something that's not static and is constantly different.
Yeah. So how do you navigate that space for advocating for your child, right? Because mm-hmm. I think, like I said, at four, you are their voice, mm-hmm. right? You're also the one saying probably their symptoms, right? But then at 14, the kid can tell you what they're feeling, what their hopes are for the hospital stay, what their fears are. Will they take a medicine? Their own things that they want to advocate for. How do you suggest parents serve as an advocate for their child?
I think, obviously it changes based on how old the child is, but asking questions and understanding, and if you don't understand something, speaking up and being like, what is that? I think sometimes we forget that not everybody completely understands everything that we're talking about too. And I think questions is probably the main thing. And if you think of something, writing it down. But it's hard being a parent and advocating for your kid, especially now when so many things online, and that may or may not be reliable, which can really cloud the picture. And I think that makes it hard on parents.
Yeah. Not knowing where sources of information get, or I should say voices that speak with authority get their mm-hmm. information mm-hmm. can really be something that leads people, I have seen, to like unfortunate conclusions. Mm-hmm. And then if you're advocating for a child in that space, that's something very delicate to also mm-hmm. navigate. So tell me about, you said you're a captain of the ship when it comes to pediatric care. So now parents are there. Are you in an academic center? Are you in a community hospital?
I'm not academic, but I'm in a dedicated children's hospital. So I do have a lot more subspecialists than most like community hospitals.
Right.
I am missing a few specialists. So that sometimes makes things a little bit tricky, but it's kind of an in-between. It's a satellite campus of a main campus. So
you have the support of a lot of specialists.
Yes.
So what you brought up is a really good point. You're in a dedicated children's hospital, mm-hmm. right? Versus there are places where people may find themselves or their children hospitalized that are not dedicated.
Right.
All right. How does that differ for what parents and children may experience or may be able to get that different types of care in these different environments?
Yes, I've worked in both settings. I've worked in a community hospital that's mainly an adult hospital that also happens to admit a few kids. Mm-hmm. And then I've also worked in children's hospitals. Those two settings are very different in the resources that you have available for caring for children. And so one thing that I've had to be very honest with parents in the community setting is, this is what I can do for you here, but if we get to X, Y, and Z, that we may have to rethink what we're doing, or we may have to go somewhere else. My goal is to care for the child as best as I can, as close to home as possible, because that's better for everyone. But your settings are definitely different. If you find yourself with a child in an adult, mainly adult hospital, some of the resources are not as kid friendly there, which can throw a wrench in things. Don't have fun colors and child life that makes the experience better. So it's sometimes a little bit trickier because of that, but staying in your hometown is also advantageous in other reasons.
Yeah, having your support system is important, right? Keeping kids where they feel supported and loved is a big part of helping kids to feel better. At what point do you tell people, hey, I think maybe we need to think about a transfer to a different facility? At what point do you think parents should be asking that question?
When I've been in the community setting without ICU support. So a lot of community settings, they can admit children to the hospital. But once you're starting to think, do I need intensive care support or an ICU potentially, that's when we kind of keep it in the back of our minds. And it's a little bit of trying to play fortune teller. You're trying to transfer a kid when they're sick enough to possibly need those services, but not so sick that they're unstable for transport. And so you're trying to treat them without getting too far, you know, without getting too sick to where if you did get to where you needed a transfer, that it would be unsafe. And so that's a little bit tricky and something you kind of have to try and predict the future a little bit.
But I think you bring up a really good point is safety, right? And we're always thinking about a patient's safety and the next step. How do we keep them safe in the next step? And transporting somebody is a time when high risk, right? So you don't want somebody to be very unstable. So you do want to think ahead. So I had a child transferred from our community hospital, my child transferred from our community hospital to a children's hospital for those exact reasons. And I remember being in the bed with her and watching the nurse overnight, like checking her oxygen and going up on the oxygen a little bit. And you would think, I'm a mom, I'm a doctor, I'm a hospitalist. My whiskers should have been up. I should have been like, okay, this isn't good. Are we going to transfer? But I felt a little intimidated to ask that question. Like, I thought maybe I was kind of overreacting. And the pediatrician the next morning walked in. I have since kind of forced my friendship on her because she was an amazing pediatrician. But she walked in and said, this doesn't look good. I don't like this. You're being transferred. And like, my heart just felt like relief that somebody else saw what I was seeing. And but people may not feel that same level of support, but they may feel what I was feeling, which is like, I'm kind of unsure. I feel like a little intimidated. I want to advocate for my kid. Am I saying doing the right thing? And so asking for that transfer didn't come that easy to me. I definitely waited for the pediatrician to like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm thinking the same exact thing you did. And she said that. She said, we don't want this to get worse. You're sticking her in an ambulance. We want to make sure she's safe for that drive. And so that is a big point to remember, is that safety.
And when I've transferred kids in the past, and parents are on all kind of huge range of emotions on that. Some are like, absolutely not. That is too far. We cannot go there. Support systems is really important. And some people really want to transfer, even if they don't need it. It runs the full gamut. But when we get to the point where we need to transfer, I tell parents, best case scenario is you get there and they do nothing different than what we've been doing and you don't end up in the ICU. I don't want them to get worse. So if you get there and they don't end up needing that, that's actually good. That means your kid's doing really well.
that's a good point. Best case scenario is... I do say that too. I say oftentimes when I transfer patients, the best thing that can happen is they go there and say, Dr. Nugent overreacted.
Right, right. Because that means your kid is doing really good.
Doing okay. You know, So don't be afraid if you're thinking of it as a parent. It sounds like you're used to that question from parents. Should my child be transferred? Can you transfer my child? And there's lots of reasons for a transfer too. You mentioned someone being unstable. What about specialized needs?
Yes, that's another reason. So there occasionally, as part of your workup in the hospital, there may be something that you're at that the hospital you're at doesn't offer that is needed. And mm-hmm. so that can necessitate a transfer as well. In the community hospital, I couldn't get echoes on pediatric patients, which mm-hmm. was problematic if I needed to evaluate the heart for something. So that was a common reason that, you know, was specialty dependent. And then in my current situation, I don't have certain services like rheumatology, dermatology, some surgical services. So once we start needing some of those specialists, we have to transfer as well.
Mm-hmm. So transferring is not always just about getting worse. Sometimes transferring is about continuing to get more information, mm-hmm. like you were saying, echocardiograms, ultrasounds of the heart, or getting to a specialist that your community hospital doesn't have. Mm-hmm. Interesting question just popped into my head. How does telemedicine fit into your work now? We use telemedicine in our hospital for like different types of services that right. can do consults. How is the world of telemedicine in pediatric hospital world going?
Yeah, we use telemedicine frequently. That's how I have infectious disease support right now, is through telemedicine.
Oh, that's awesome.
In the community hospital that I worked at, we had a neonatologist that came down 3 days a week, and the other days were telemedicine. And then, right as I left my previous job, we were starting to be able to do echoes remotely with the cardiologist through telemedicine. Mm. I couldn't get them in an emergency situation, but if I just needed to, like I did newborn nursery at that point, if I needed to get an echo on a newborn before they went home, I could schedule it for like the next day remotely, which was very nice. And that baby could stay in our town, which was really good. So telemedicine has been super helpful and in caring for pediatric patients, especially because we have such a shortage of subspecialists to begin with. And so it's expanded coverage where we've needed it.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing. Like I said, the idea just popped into my head, but that's a great way that we're offering services and, like you said, keeping people in their community when possible. That's wonderful. So we've talked about transfers, which I'm thankful that we brought that up. That's a great topic. We talked about being captain. I've had another hospitalist say he's a quarterback.
Or quarterback.
Right? I love all these sports analogies because really it shows that you're the person who's in the center, right? Mm-hmm. I think in the adult world, sometimes people aren't used to this idea of seeing a different physician in the hospital. They want their primary care doctor. And I remember being a teenager, I was wasn't fully hospitalized, but I was in the emergency department and my pediatrician came. But that was like in the 90s, right? That type of practice doesn't really happen as often anymore. And the role of the hospitalist is really key. How do you feel people could best think of you and think of how you add to their care and their child's experience in healthcare? Because hospitalists are not, one of my huge pet peeves is just the hospitalist. Like, they're not just somebody who's like, you'll never see again, or a fill-in doctor. There's a big role that we play in someone's healthcare. So how do you explain to patients they can best get the most out of your time with them?
You bring up just the hospitalist. In a lot of scenarios, especially when we have telehealth involved, doing a good history and a physical exam from the hospitalist can really make or break how things are going to go. Mm-hmm. Getting that detailed physical exam that encompasses all systems. So I have to be very detail-oriented. And so your hospitalist is not only caring for you, but when specialists are involved, they're also advocating for the patient too, and having to think about the whole picture. And so I think that's very important. Every kid that I take care of in the hospital, I kind of feel like they're my own child. I take care of them like they're my own child.
That's beautiful.
So I not only think about what's best medical wise, but sometimes also social wise or parent-wise, infectious disease is telling me they want to do something. And I'm like, I know that's what you want to do, but I'm not sure about that. We have based on this and this and this, and you had some information and backstory. So we provide a lot of site and stuff too, and maybe additional details that they may not know about as well. And so we also hear frustrations. So trying to help with that too, and make anything better. So not only providing medical care, but also once we have multiple people involved or services, not even doctors, but social workers, dietitians, occupational therapists, speech therapists. There's mm-hmm. lots of services that see children. And so we coordinate between everyone and make sure that they're cared for the best we can.
Yeah. You brought up about parents being able to do things, thinking about the social needs of the parents and the mm-hmm. children. And that brings up one of my favorite roles in upcoming episode is case management.
Yes.
Case managers and hospitalists work hand in hand mm-hmm. because addressing somebody's social needs, what they can do outside of the hospital, what they have access to, things like that, sets them up for success after mm-hmm. a hospital stay. And so do you have any insights on case managers and for parents and children?
Yeah, thankfully, I love case managers. They help me so much.
They do.
Especially in coordinating between what's covered with insurance and what's not. Like, that's a whole huge ordeal. But setting up, my ultimate goal is to get kids home and to get them as home as soon as possible, but as mm-hmm. in a safe way, of course, because kids just do better at home. So in terms of case managers, you have to have some really honest discussions with parents about what they think they're capable or not capable of doing and how that's going to impact our plan for home, especially for kids with complicated care needs, or if the treatment that we're going to finish is going to roll over into going home and continuing it there, what we're going to be able to do. And so parents can advocate by being honest, this is going to go well, this is not going to go well.
Yeah.
This is my concern here, because I'm coming up with a plan in my head, but I always have like a plan A, a plan B, a plan C in case XYZ happens.
Yeah.
And so if somebody gives me additional information where plan A is not going to work, then I've jumped to plan B in my head. So being upfront and honest about some of those things is helpful.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing that I say is if there's ever someone to like lay all your cards out with and say what you can do, what you can't do, what your schedule is, what your concerns, your fears are, it's the case manager. Because the last thing you want is to go out without something you need or mm-hmm. go out with something that's a little bit too much. So I once spoke to a parent who was talking about her experience in a hospital. And one of her concerns was that they were going to discharge her child with oxygen. This was a child who didn't need oxygen. Usually, they didn't think the child would need oxygen for a while, but the child really, really wanted to leave. And they thought maybe you'd go home with oxygen for a little bit and have the visiting nurse come. And the parents were just like, whoa, we don't know how to do this. Like, mm-hmm. we are really uncomfortable with this idea of oxygen. And it was the case managers who slowed the whole thing down, mm-hmm. saying exactly that, went back to the hospitals and said, no, like this kid thinks they can do it, but the whole setup at home and the parents' concerns and the whole family's concerns about bringing this oxygen home, even for a couple days, is a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I think that's a great example of like lay it out for the case managers because they work in tandem with your mm-hmm. hospitalist.
Right.
Yeah. So pediatric hospitalists have a huge, huge role in how parents and children interact in their healthcare. One mm-hmm. of the things that I was always struck about when I'm on different committees with the hospital is that our pediatric hospitalists bring such a broad view of any issue because mm-hmm. they're thinking about people on that whole developmental scale and that whole social needs scale. And so huge partners in your child's healthcare. How do you work with their pediatrician in the office?
Yeah, I'm telling a parent, you need to go back and see your pediatrician and this needs to be done, or you need repeat labs in this amount of time. Yeah, if it's very routine and they don't have to do anything specifically, just check in, then I usually fax discharge summaries so they have what happened at the hospital. But if it's something that's going to need to be done, I call their pediatrician and tell them, hey, I have your patient here in the hospital. This is what we've been doing, and this is kind of what needs to be done going forward so that they know what's happening and don't feel lost or like I just dump something on them that they're not prepared for. So I call pediatricians and talk to them about care going forward pretty frequently. And also, I've called pediatricians when because it's hard coming into the hospital and seeing a doctor you've never seen before and like, who is this person? Do I trust them? Sometimes looping in the pediatrician can help them feel good about a plan. And so times that's been needed as well.
Well, thank you so much for all the work you do for parents and children in the hospital and taking some time to explain some of your work and some of your tips. And can I ask you for your top two tips for parents and children when working with a pediatric hospitalist?
One is write down questions when you think of them. As soon as doctors walk in your room, you're not going to remember anything. And
That's true.
that's very normal. So writing them down helps make sure that you ask everything that you thought of, because you always think of something at 2 in the morning. The other thing that I usually recommend to families is a lot of parents feel overwhelmed being kind of the go-between between telling family what's going on with their child and then also making decisions. And so I really encourage people to like FaceTime or call and put on speakerphone or whoever that support person is that's going to be asking you a bunch of questions. Or if one parent's there and one parent's gone, call them so they can hear, visit in the room. And that helps everyone be on the same page. They can ask questions all at the same time. And then if talking to your, say it's mom and then grandma calls at 8 p.m. She already knows what's going on. You're not having to try and answer medical questions that you don't feel comfortable with. And so there's a very important support person to you that you want to know what's going on. Like, we're happy to include them in discussions if that helps you and has that second set of ears. And I feel like that goes a long way because we can ask questions all together, all be on the same page, and then that parent's not having to explain things later and get frustrated. Something that is really helpful from both sides, both the parent side and also the medical team side, because we can all discuss together any questions that anybody has.
Yeah, no decisions made in a vacuum and no experience is by itself. So that's really good advice to bring in the parent support system as well. I love that. So as we close, I always ask people if there's a TV show or a movie that you would point to say, if you want to know what I do, if you want to know what my day is like, this is it. Or you would point to say, if you really want to see a bad example of pediatrics or pediatric hospital medicine or the experience of hospitals for patients and their parents, this would be the movie. And I find people have pretty strong opinions about the bad one more than they do the good one. What movie or TV show do you think you would point to?
I've tried thinking about this from the pediatric perspective. I don't really have a good one, I don't think. I don't watch a lot of medical shows. I try to stay away from them. My favorite is Scrubs.
I love it. I'm a huge Scrubs fan.
But I mean, I really like Scrubs because I feel like it's one of the best shows that, even though it's not pediatric centered, it really does a good job kind of communicating all of the staff in a hospital and how they work together and their different roles. And that's it, it's also funny.
Yeah, no, I
But
think, yeah.
also like has a lot of hard-hitting truths as
Yeah.
well. There is an episode of Scrubs where Dr. Cox takes his kid to the pediatrician and is really worried that the kid is really doing not so good. And the pediatrician is like, I know that all of these bad things that can happen, but your kid is going to be okay.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the things I like most about being a pediatrician too, is telling people when their kids are okay. And we see enough sickness and unfortunate things that happen to kids, but it's very rewarding to also tell someone that everything's okay and your kid is doing well.
That's great. That's beautiful, because we all need a win sometimes. And that's, I think that's a really good point, that when you get to say good news, that also makes you feel good. Mm-hmm. So I think that's awesome. Yeah. I had a hard time with this question, because when I think about movies that show children in hospitals or shows, they're very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're very, and oftentimes centered around like the parents' experience.
Mm-hmm.
And like what the parents are going through, like on the outside, and not particularly. And I struggled with this one too, when I was like, oh, I'm going to talk to Christy. I got to come up with a good one. And yeah, I kind of really struggled with this. I listened to a book recently, and I feel embarrassed that I don't remember the name of the book. But one of the two characters met as children in a pediatric hospital, and it kind of like talks about their experience as they grow up together. But they met in the room where they let the kids play games and videos games.
Yeah.
And like these kids ended up playing video games. And I think that play for children is really important at any point in time. One of the benefits of being in like a pediatric hospital, when you were saying like, oh, sometimes in a place that doesn't have a lot of things that are kids friendly or kids centered, one of the benefits of mainly pediatric hospitals is that they do build in play, and they do build time for the experience of childhood to continue even during illness and times in the hospital. And I'm going to remember that book. I'm going to email you. I just remember being struck by that like, oh, I know where they are. They're in the child life room where they get to play video games. And I thought that was really an interesting inclusion in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Christy Goodson, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Mm-hmm. Thank you for all you do for your patients and their families. I know it's hard work getting people through acute illness, but getting families with children through acute illness is kind of a double whammy. So thank you so much for doing that great work. And thank you for sharing your insights.
Yeah.
This has been a fun conversation. So thank you so much. And
thank you
to my listeners,
me.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Prescription for Admission, the podcast. Have a good one.